Broadcasted live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
If you happen to be employed or someone who is employable and employs others, we're well aware that you're in a very fortunate position in a country like South Africa. But what does that mean for the world of work? It's evolution and the changes in employee demands and remuneration practices. Someone who knows all about this is Dr. Mark Bassin, President of the South African Reward Association. Dr. Bassin, such a pleasure to speak to you again.
Greetings, Guguletu. How are you?
Very excited to speak to you, sir, because this conversation always gets many South Africans eager, optimistic, and I think we walk away feeling like we have more negotiation power, right?
Indeed. Thank you for a lively and heart-hitting show.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Bassin. I'm excited about this one, and maybe we do just need to reflect on one of the last few conversations we've had in recent months, and that's really been just the change in the work culture and work dynamics and practices that therefore then influence remuneration policies. So from an employment point of view, what trends are we seeing that would subsequently influence remuneration policies and structures?
So there are quite a few trends, and the new generation coming up are asking not just what must I do, but why? Why must I do it? They want purpose. They need to know how their job fits in with the department, the division, the business unit, the whole company, global. And they don't want to go to work 8 to 5 anymore. They don't want a job description sit in that corner from 8 to 5. You'll get paid on the midpoint of your pay scale. No, I want to go and pick up my kids from nursery school. I want to go to gym. I want to do this and that. So they're looking for flexibility. Flexibility is probably right near the top.
Flexibility. And you're quite right. We are seeing that remote as well as hybrid work certainly featuring top of mind there. One thing that also stands out, I guess, is the transparency around pay structures. And we've seen this in global debates around a gender pay parity. And even from a racial point of view or culturally, especially with multinational companies for people who come from both developing and developed economies. What are we seeing regarding pay transparency and equity?
Yeah, so to try and fix that, almost 60 years ago, the USA, Canada, Europe implemented what's called the Pay Equity Act. Those are 60 years old. And yet in those territories, men still earn about 20% more than women. 20% is an average, so some are a bit better, 15, others are a bit worse, 25, 30. And one asks oneself, how does that happen? When it comes to cultures, the American Caucasian will earn 50% more than a Hispanic, for example. In Germany, the German will earn more than the Turk. In Russia, the Russian will earn more than the Vietnamese. In South Africa, men still very, very unfortunately earn more than women. Most people ask, you know, what is the race situation like? Well, we've had laws here that have forced companies to do things at the top end. Race earns approximately equal, and if we had to look at every scarce positions, you could say that black folk earn more than white folk. But in the middle and further down, you could say that white folk earn more than black folk. Mm-hmm. The big question is, how does it happen? We've got the Employment Equity Act. We've got all these various acts. But it's very hard to unmask because everyone's got a pay scale. Everyone fits into the pay scale. It just happens that some are near the top and some are near the bottom.
Got you. And I'm glad that you mentioned this. I'm also finding that when it comes to big corporates, in terms of their minimal payment structure, there've been a lot more, a heightened level of transparency, especially in the financial services space. Companies like Old Mutual, Investec come to mind when it comes to disclosures around their minimum salaries or lowest paid employees' salaries. Is that also something that's growing prominently locally?
Yes. So there's a wonderful saying, when you shine light, sunlight or a torch into something, you can see better. So when you're more transparent, you can see better what's happening at the bottom ends there and what's happening with the pay gap ratios. When we talk about pay gaps and unequal pay and unfair pay, there are two types. The one is vertical. So what does the lowest paid worker earn relative to the highest paid worker? And there in South Africa, we're looking at a pay gap ratio of about 1 in 200. That's about average on the international level. And then you look at the horizontal pay gap, which means me and you, we're doing exactly the same job, and I get paid more than you. By showing what the pay scales are, by shining light, by being more transparent, it helps with fixing that. Now, the government have just made big amendments to the Companies Amendment Bill, and Section 30A and 30B are the two sections in particular that deal with this, where companies are going to have to declare by law the top 5% of earners and the bottom 5% of earners. And that also is going to shine a light.
Is that regardless of whether the company is publicly listed or privately owned?
It's easier to do with publicly listed because by law you have to produce it. Mm-hmm. Privately listed, it's a bit more difficult. But if you want to ever sell your private company, then you'll have to declare it and show people or show the buyers what it is that you're doing.
Got you. I find this so intriguing because, as you say, this disclosure will obviously, you know, not only try to ensure that there's full transparency and I guess a mean, an average that we can work towards as industries, but it also brings into a different perspective what the workforce actually wants. And from what we're finding, you mentioned that remote and hybrid work is very popular. From what I'm also seeing, it almost seems as though even the reward structure is very different, where it's not just about the money and the benefits, as baby boomers might have said in the past. But a lot of the millennials and Gen Zs are actually looking for, I guess, a holistic employment experience.
Indeed. The holistic employment means the whole total reward package. So, yes, the money is important. It's a ticket to the stadium. But once you're in the stadium, you've got to play authentic leadership. You've got to play the benefits. Now, in China, one big retail chain, huge, they've implemented, you're allowed 10 unhappy days leave a year.
10 unhappy days?
Yes.
Whoa. What does that even mean?
You're feeling unhappy. You just put in that leave form and you put the unhappy day leave and you're like 10 a year, no questions asked. They also had a lotto for everyone got a ticket and you put that in a big drum and you could pick out 1 year's paid leave and your job was secure when you came back. So that's sort of massive change that we're looking for. We're not looking for tinkering with these benefits. You know, you're looking for big change because before, if you went to gym and you said you've got a personal trainer, it was fine on the physical side. Mm-hmm. If you said you're going to a psychologist or mental health person or helper, there was something wrong with you. Now, 1 in 5 Americans and 1 in 6 Australians are on fluoxetine, which is the active ingredient for Prozac and depression. And it's fine to say I'm going to the mental health practitioner. So this whole thing of wellness when you're looking at benefits is huge. People need days off. They need to take time out when they're about to burn out. So you give someone 15 days, and how does that touch on remuneration? Well, we design incentive schemes. We give you short-term incentive plans and long-term incentive plans that push you, and then we are pushing some people over the edge. Mm-hmm. We need to be a little bit more cautious. Yes, the business objective is very, very important, but not at the expense of your employees' health.
This is so interesting, Dr. Bassan, because as you say, it's not just about the remuneration, it's about the productivity, but the productivity relies on the health and well-being of the employee. What does this look like when we, you know, then throw in the data and the analytics of making sure that in as much as we want flexible work environments and flexible remuneration structures, that we're still being productive and that technology in itself also doesn't come across as a threat to take our jobs?
Gotcha. I mean, We can use AI and advanced learning to help us monitor this a bit better. I mean, if I've been putting in leave on a Friday or Monday, or I've been taking 3-4 weeks, you know, every year consistently over a period, or if I'm suddenly getting divorced or someone's passed away in my family, you need to be able to pick that up. And I don't think we're good enough at picking that up. Mm-hmm. So we need to make sure that AI does it for us. And that way you can start managing people individually, not just as a cohort. We've got the information, but it's just there with HR and they see it, but don't do anything. You know, the line manager's too busy making money and trying to be productive as possible. So I'm not scared of AI in business. I'm not scared of AI in HR. And it can help us. And that way you can pinpoint problem areas much quicker and deal with them. Mm.
I find this so refreshing, because in as much as it brings to light the importance of our most important resource, which is humans, you and I as people who actually do the job on a daily basis, it also brings about a conundrum for executive leaders, especially those who are in roles and positions that were previously known as human resources. And now that the titles have really shifted, right? Human capital or people management is sometimes what it's referred to. I'm keen to understand, what does this mean then when we're trying to streamline processes, benefits, roles and functions, pay grades as well within big corporate organizations, and how that might filter down to small and medium-sized enterprises? Because that then makes it difficult for Google to want to work and compare offers from a medium company to a big corporate and a multinational in terms of their remuneration structure. So how are professionals responding?
That's a great question. So there are two angles to the question. On the one part, we do have massive salary surveys and huge databases that can tell you what does a host in a radio station earn, what does a bookkeeper earn, what does a scientist, engineer, lawyer. So those databases exist. But AI will help us interrogate them better. They'll smooth it out. So I don't have to be on the same medical aid plan as everybody. I'm young, I'm fit. I want to be on the hospital plan or the cold plan. You can be on the silver plan, the next person on the gold plan, and the next person on the platinum full Monty plan. So that's one way we can sharpen the pencil and implement things that I call my pay, my way. And my work, my way. It's the same as a pension fund. You know, we all put in exactly the same amount. I might be very close to retirement and want to put in more. You might not even want it in the first place. And we need to get much more creative around that. Now, I think AI there can help us as well, because it picks up what the gaps are and it identifies it relative to the policy. So you can ask AI to look at all your policies and say, what's the best fit for this person, Tabo or Tandy or John Doe. And it'll do that.
Exactly. I find it so refreshing, and it almost seems as though we need to, you know, dig deeper into what works, what needs to shift, and it's changing into a bespoke approach. Is that also, I guess, where the opportunity lies for us to measure talent, their level of productivity?
Yes, and bespoke. I'm a human being, by the way.
Yes.
My name is Mark. You know, I'm not just employee number 12492.
Exactly. I like that, Mark. And you know, you're really making it practical for us, because I have my own needs as Google, right? And the responsibilities I have and maybe the flexibility that I require. So it's a refreshing perspective. But of course, we always want to wrap up on a positive note, Mark. And I guess, you know, as we walk away, many of us will prepare for the holiday. We'll have some downtime. Maybe in 2025, we realize, hold on, I don't think my value is recognized in my workspace or with the clients I consult with or wherever, you know, wherever my workplace is. So how then do we need to reflect and review our productivity and the remuneration structures we want, and how do we bring that to the negotiation table?
Beautiful question, and it's a nice one to end on. So the last thing you do, so this is what not to do.
Mm-hmm.
Don't go and say, I've got a house bond payment of so much. I've got a Mercedes-Benz payment of so much. I've got the shoes I need to pay for so much, and therefore I need so much. So that's the wrong way of doing it. The right way of doing it is to talk about your job and your outputs and how your outputs support and drive the business strategy.
Okay.
Then you need to ask your line manager some questions. Where am I on the pay scale? Am I near the bottom? Am I in the middle? Or am I near the top?
Mm-hmm.
How do I move through my pay scale quicker? And how can I earn a bigger bonus? That's the question you need to ask.
Oh,
the last question you need to ask is, what do I need to do to get promoted? Please spell it out for me. Put the career path in front of me. And that way is a much better way than saying, I can't afford my monthly living. I'm going bust. I'm going under. You know, the company can't pay people what they think they feel they should earn.
Mm-hmm.
But the company can pay you for delivering value and delivering on outputs and outcomes.
Oh, perfect. You've made this so tangible for us, Mark. Just look at me. I've went from Dr. Matt Basson to Mark. See?
Going back to the people. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Mark. We wish you a wonderful festive season and holiday period. Looking forward to touching base with you next year.
And to you too. God bless.
Thank you. Oh, that's Dr. Mark Basson, president of the South African Rewards Association. Practical tips, right? And even though we might be feeling the December slump and year-end fatigue, it's a beautiful refresher and a reminder just for us to understand, hold on, what's happening in terms of industry trends, locally versus international? What changes in policies do I need to be mindful of, especially when it comes to disclosures that Mark mentioned? But also, how do I make this work for me as an individual when I approach my employer or clients as a consultant, and of course sharing my value proposition. And as Dr. Basson highlighted, it really does speak to making sure that you measure your outputs, how that speaks to your value. But ask the right questions. The responses to the questions will give you the blueprint as to how it is that you shift above your pay scale. Where are you on the pay scale? How is it that you are able to get a promotion? How is it that you also can qualify for a bigger or better bonus? Ask the right questions. Prepare yourselves. 2025, we're taking it to another level.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.